Well, good morning. I'd like to thank you for joining me again as we continue our progress on the Gospel Project. This morning we'll be back in the book of Luke, Luke chapter 6, and we'll start at verse 12 when we get there. I'd just like to remind you to stay healthy and stay safe, and look forward to hopefully being able to start considering getting back together again sometime after the 1st of June, depending on how things are playing out here in the distant near future. But just know that the leadership will be discussing those things and continuing to try to look at how we can safely gather together when that time arises. And if you have any concerns, if you have any thing that you think we should consider when that time comes, you can contact Tim Wiggins or Ken Brown or myself, either by phone or by email, and we would take that into consideration. I'd just like to remind you that we are the body of Christ, and it is wonderful if we can take a few minutes here and there in our time of isolation and just give each other a phone call. Call those people that you're used to seeing on Sunday morning, who it's been 6 or 7 weeks now since maybe you've seen and talked to. Just let them know that you're thinking about them, and if you have the opportunity, ask if there's something you can pray for them about or something that you can do for them. Speaking of prayer, I'd just like to mention that this coming Thursday, May 7th, is the National Day of Prayer. I would just encourage you very strongly to pray for, first of all, President Trump, with the situation that we're in and how he's dealing with that. Second, for the rest of our national leaders, especially our state senators and congressmen who are representing us in Washington, D.C., as they have to look at how to govern and ask questions about what this time should look like and what the future might hold. Also pray for Governor Pritzker as he's making decisions here for the state of Illinois. Whether you agree with them or not, he is still one of our leaders who we are asked to pray for in the pages of Scripture. And then I'd ask you, whatever city, whatever town, community you live in, that you would just pray for the elected officials there in that community, as they as well are having to make decisions that affect not just themselves, but others within the city government and the people within their community. I know that, you know, for each of us, this is a difficult time, but for those who have to make decisions that impact so many, this is a difficult time. Might also just ask, you know, pray for school district leaders as well, as they're trying to figure out the best way to look to the future and, you know, what ifs that some people are hanging out there. What if we can't go back to school in August like we've already planned? How do we morph to something that will be effective? So those are just four groups of people that we should be praying for as we come into this time. And, you know, Thursday is just a special day of prayer. I would encourage you to pray for those things more frequently, but Thursday is the National Day of Prayer. With that said, we'll turn now to our sermon. I remember when I was younger, a lot of summers, I would help my mom get ready for school. We would go in early one morning and we would rearrange the classroom the way that she wanted it set up for the coming school year. We would distribute materials that the kids were going to need for the school year. Mom would have gone through and written names on workbooks and stuff for the young children that she was teaching, and then we would put those in their desks. We would attach name cards to the desks so each of the students knew which one was theirs. We would, do other things that would help those students be prepared for that first day of school, and then to be prepared to succeed for the rest of the year. There were another host of things that we would help mom do at home as she was preparing to go back to school herself. And for mom, I know there was even more. There were things like seeing where each of the students was going to need to be in a reading group, or making lesson plans for the first couple of weeks, and making preparations for the special needs that any of those students might have to help facilitate their instruction and learning. And, quite frankly, I know that there's a lot else that went into that. And unless you're a teacher, I'm sure you don't know all of what goes into that. But Jesus was a teacher as well. And amongst other things, I'm sure he had times when he looked at his mission and planned and prepared the lessons that he was going to teach his followers. And even though maybe not his enemies, but those that were at least antagonistic to him, by the time we get to Luke chapter 6, Jesus already had a crowd of people following him, eager to hear what his teachings were, or at least desiring the healings that they had seen and they believed that they need. But now in Luke chapter 6, he's going to move into a different phase of his ministry. A phase of his ministry where he begins to prepare some of those followers to become the first witnesses to the world of what Jesus came ultimately to do. That is, to die on the cross, to pay the price for our sins, to rise again on the third day. Jesus was preparing. Jesus was going to teach some of his followers more closely and more in depth than he would the whole crowd. Now, while we're not Jesus training the first apostles for the meaning of his life and death and resurrection, we are called to make disciples who are to then teach everything that Jesus taught, or teaching them everything Jesus taught, so that they in turn can make disciples themselves. So I think that we can learn a lot about the stages of what I'll call pre-discipleship from Luke chapter 6, beginning at verse 12 this morning. It says, "One of those days, Jesus went out to a mountainside to pray and spent the night praying to God. When the morning came, he called his disciples to him and chose 12 of them, whom he designated apostles: Simon, whom he named Peter, his brother Andrew, James, John, Philip, Bartholomew, Matthew, Thomas, James, son of Alphaeus, Simon, who was called the Zealot, Judas, son of James, and Judas Iscariot, who became a traitor." Here we have Jesus, who is going to begin to narrow down the group that he has been teaching, so that he can shift into a more a deeper level of training. And there are two activities that come before the teaching shifts into high gear for this teacher and the students who are about to become his apostles. The first of those, It says, one of those days Jesus went out to the mountainside to pray. First one is he spent time alone. He spent time alone. You see, even though Jesus is just beginning his ministry and has really just beginning to shift from one gear to another in his ministry, Jesus has already been doing and teaching a lot. You know, we already, if you look through Luke, we see a couple of healings. He has cast out some demons. He has been teaching and being pressed by the crowd. So he gets in a boat to teach where he can be away, but with the crowds. And Jesus is also, he's got people pressing in on around him. They're bringing the sick. They're coming if they're broken. And they're coming to Jesus already early in his ministry looking for healing. And there is a lot of stress that is put upon Jesus in this time. And so Jesus has to get away from those who are looking for healing and getting away from those who are there for the teaching, the crowds that have begun to gather, so that he can think clearly, so that he can rest physically, so that he can be prepared for the next stage in what he's going to do. And so Jesus, in several places, it said that Jesus would go away. He would slip away from his disciples. He would slip away from the crowds. He would slip away from the people that were coming to hear and to be healed, because he needed that opportunity to relax, to refresh, to rejuvenate, so that when he went back into ministry, he could be prepared. He could be prepared physically. He could be prepared mentally. He could be prepared spiritually for the things that were going to take place. I think it's important that as we look at what we have been called to do, and that is make disciples, that we have to realize that there are times when we have to focus on how we are going to be prepared, how we're going to be physically and emotionally and spiritually ready to share with those who we have are taking on as disciples. Now for us, I think this is greater than it was for Jesus. But for us, when we get physically tired, when we get emotionally tired, when we get spiritually drained and depleted, when we have been busy and hard at it, we begin to become more prone to sin. And those sins can take on different levels and different forms of sin. I know for myself, when I start to get tired, and especially when I begin to get spiritually drained, when I haven't spent the time I need to with the Lord, I start to get bitter, or not bitter, but sarcastic. And sometimes I even become a little bit prone to quickly become angry. And I know that when I see those things and I hear those things in myself, that it means it's time to take a step back and to reconsider and rethink through what I'm doing and how I can effectively rejuvenate and restore my spirit. And I think even though Jesus was God, he was still man. And I think that he had to get away to rejuvenate so that those things that might become temptations for him were things that he could handle. The second part of that getting away, Jesus says that not only did he go out by himself to the mountainside, but he went to pray and he spent the night praying to God. Jesus went out for a time for prayer. Now, we're not told what Jesus prayed for. In fact, I was thinking through and I kind of did a quick look through the four Gospels in the New Testament, and I could only find really two times that we're told what Jesus prayed. One of those is in the Garden of Gethsemane, when he was praying for the possibility of some other way to deal with sin and to overcome the power of the devil than the cross that lay before him within the next few hours. And the other time was only a few hours before the prayer in the garden, and that was prayer in the upper room when Jesus prays for his disciples and their protection and their unity. And in looking at it, he's also thus praying for us that we would be unified and that we could find protection in this world as we follow Jesus Christ. Those are the only two times that I could think of and quickly come across that we know exactly what Jesus was praying. He did teach his disciples how to pray. We know it as the Lord's Prayer. Some people know it as the Our Father. There from Matthew chapter 6, where they asked Jesus how to pray, and Jesus taught them or gave them this model prayer and said, this is the kind of things that you should be praying for. But we're not told that that's what Jesus was praying. We're just told that that's what he taught his disciples. And Luke doesn't tell us exactly what Jesus was praying for. He just says that Jesus went out to the mountainside to pray. And he spent the night praying. Now, I have to believe that probably some of what Jesus was praying for in this particular situation was wisdom. That he was praying because he was preparing to choose his disciples. And we're told that Jesus was doing what the Father showed him. And so I believe that part of what Jesus was doing was he was praying for wisdom. In fact, it might be the same way that the Apostle James, or actually not the Apostle, but the brother of Jesus, James, says it to his audience in James chapter 1. He says, if any of you lacks wisdom, he should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to him. You know, I think that just as we can ask for wisdom, I think that in this particular case, probably part of what Jesus was asking for was wisdom for the decision that he was going to make, that he would choose the right 12. The other side of that, I think that Jesus was probably praying for strength. Because like I said, he's been busy in ministry. He's been deep into it already. And it's only going to get more challenging, and it's going to become more strenuous, and it's going to become more difficult as the days and the weeks and the months pass on from this point. We already see that the leaders of the people, the Pharisees and the scribes and the Sadducees, that they're already beginning to take note of Jesus and his teaching, and they're already beginning to have some conflict there. And so I think Jesus would going to be needing the strength that comes to help us to fight temptation. And Jesus is going to begin to move from place to place. And somebody once asked him, you know, about following him, and Jesus said, the Son of Man has no place to lay his head. You know, Jesus didn't have any particular place that he was now going to call home. He was going to be a traveling teacher. And, you know, that's going to take some strength. I think that, you know, the emotional side of things is going to begin to take some strength, as we're told later that, you know, Jesus mother and brothers think that he is crazy, and he, you know, sidesteps his earthly family for a period of time, basking rather and staying with the disciples, or probably most closely the 12 who he calls to follow him. But I think he's going to be praying for strength. And I think for us, you know, if Jesus needed to pray, if Jesus needed to pray to continue in his ministry, I think that it is only wise for you and me to see the necessity of prayer for our own lives. That we need to be praying, you know, for wisdom. How can we wisely discern those people who we should be teaching as disciples of Christ? Who are those people that it would be wise for us to help to learn and to grow? Because while there's a lot of good that we can do for people, we can't do everything for everyone. And we all have only a certain amount of time in a week, and we only have a certain amount of energy in a week, and we only have a certain ability to prepare, to teach, and to help people grow. And so we, like Jesus, we need to be discerning as we go into making decisions about who it is that we can disciple. And then we also need to be praying for strength, that we would have the strength to give them what they need and to be prepared for the things that the enemy will bring against us in those times when we're trying to help other people learn. We need to be prepared. And one of the great ways to do that is through prayer. Well, that brings me to the second of the two activities that we see in Jesus that are really should be part of our pre-discipleship, and it really builds off of what I've already been saying, and that is Jesus chose the 12 from the many. Jesus had, pardon me, it's allergy season. And I'm doing my best. Anyway, Jesus chooses the 12 from the many. It says that he called his disciples up on the mountaintop with him, or to where he was, and then he chose 12 of them. You know, Jesus chose 12 for a purpose. You know, we could look at the theological purpose for Jesus choosing 12, and that is there were 12 tribes of Israel, and so Jesus is choosing 12 disciples that will be the new foundation of the way that Jesus is doing things. And so there is a theological basis for choosing 12. There's also just the fact that 12 is a number that is handleable. It's not too big, and you start to get much beyond that, and it becomes difficult to teach them in the same personal ways. You get larger classes, larger groups of people, and you have to begin to change the way that you teach them. But with a group of 12, you can meet each of them individually in a unique way. But beyond that, there's a purpose for Jesus choosing the 12 out of the many, and the first of those is to train them. Jesus is going to take these 12 with them, and they're going to see the things that he does. They're going to hear the things that he teaches in ways that the crowd isn't. There are going to be some that follow from the beginning of his ministry until the end. We see in Acts that there's 120, and Judas has gone from the 11. And from those 120, they put forth two people who had been with Jesus from the beginning and had seen him after his death And from those two, they choose a replacement for Judas Iscariot. But Jesus is going to train these men. He's going to train them for a purpose. And their purpose in choosing these 12 is so that when he ascends into heaven after his death, burial, and resurrection, when he goes back to heaven, that they can become the foundation of the church, that they can become the teachers and the preachers of the very first generation of the church, that they can know what Jesus sounded like, they can know what he thought, they can know how he spent his days and his night, and they can then take the things that Jesus has taught and the ways he applied the Israelite scriptures that we call the Old Testament, the way that he applied those things and the ways that he dealt with certain situations, and they, as the beginning, as the foundation, can begin to then turn around and train other people. And so Jesus is really choosing from this group of disciples the 12, not necessarily the most educated. We know they probably weren't. Not necessarily the brightest, the fastest, the strongest. But he was choosing 12 who had certain character traits, who had certain abilities that he knew were going to be necessary for them in the future. And so he had this purpose, and part of his purpose was to train them in the 3 years that he had of ministry from when he began until his death on the cross. He's going to train them, and eventually he's going to release them into ministry. And so Jesus had to, we go back to why Jesus was praying. Jesus was praying for wisdom because he needed to choose the right 12. The 12 who would fulfill the purpose and necessities of what was going to come. And so we see Jesus training them to release them. And when we make disciples, when we choose somebody that we say, you know, that's somebody whose life I'm going to build into, and we need to have those same concepts in mind. We need to look for people who are trainable, people who we can train, because, you know, quite frankly, we all learn differently and we all do things differently. And so there are some people who you just won't be able to share with in the same way you could someone else. And you need to look at their temperaments, and you need to look at their desires, and you need to look at their learning styles and say, because of these things, this person would be a good fit for me to help disciple. Now, this other person who is sitting right beside them, they're not going to be a good fit for me. And then maybe we help those people find the right people. We point them to somebody else, or we tell them it's not going to be optimal, but I'll do my best. And we train them, we teach them, we help them to learn what it means to be a follower of Jesus. You know, what it looks like to love one another and to love God with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength. What do those two things look like practically? What does it mean to learn everything that Jesus taught? You know, as Jesus told his disciples. And we need to be preparing them to release them into ministry. And we have to understand people's temperaments so that we can help prepare them. And I think that's the second part of Jesus choosing the 12. And that is, he knew each one's potential. He could look at each one of them and know what their potential was. I think that's why he spent time in prayer as well, praying for wisdom, so that he could discern the 12 of them that would the potential that they had within them, the potential for success. You know, we look at the list of 12, Peter, Andrew, James, John, Philip, Bartholomew, Matthew, Thomas, James, son of Alphaeus, Simon, who was called the Zealot, Judas, son of James, and Judas Iscariot. And if we look, we hear about Judas Iscariot at the very end of Jesus' ministry because he becomes the traitor, as Luke fills us in on. We read about Thomas, and we know we call him Doubting Thomas because of his couple of times in during Jesus' ministry and the once after the resurrection where Thomas has a little part to play in Thomas's questions after Jesus' resurrection. You know, we read about Matthew only at his when he is brought in to become one of the disciples, and he throws a party for other tax collectors and other sinners. And then we hear of Peter, James, and John. And, you know, really, we hear about Peter, James, and John. We don't read a lot about the other nine disciples. One, because Judas Iscariot leaves the group and commits suicide after betraying Jesus. But once we get past the end of Jesus' ministry here on earth, we read about Peter, James, and John at the beginning of the book of Acts, and we read through and we find that James was killed shortly after the church began, and then we read about Peter and John for a while, and then we read just about Peter. You see, Jesus didn't choose men who would become overly ambitious to be well known. Rather, he chose men whose temperaments he knew would make them successful for the ministry, even if they didn't become famous. He chose them for the place and the thing, a job that they would play within the early church and setting up the early church for success that eventually would lead to the point where you and I are part of the church, because those 12 men who were chosen as disciples were successful. And Jesus chose them for the ability to be successful. Jesus chose them even though he knew that some of them would fail him. I'm not sure when, but we know that Jesus, by the night of the Last Supper, Jesus knew that Simon Peter would deny him three times. We're told that all of the disciples scattered somewhat, at least, from the garden when Jesus was arrested, yet we find that John and Peter follow Jesus to the courtyard of Pilate, well, actually to the courtyard of the high priest, and follow him as long as they can. At least John does. John follows him even farther to the cross. John is there at the cross as Jesus is dying from crucifixion. And so Jesus knew that there would be those that would fail him. In fact, Jesus, by the time that the Last Supper was there, Jesus knew that Judas Iscariot was going to go and betray him. Yet what we see is Jesus knew each one's potential for success. Jesus knew each one's potential for failing him, but he chose them anyway. I think for us, it's important to remember that when we go and we choose who it is that we believe we can disciple, we have to remember that they, just like us, there are going to be times that they're successful, that they're going to seem to be growing by leaps and bounds, and then there's going to be times when they fail, when they fall into a pattern of sin for a while, or they seem to turn their back on that which they've been learning. And we have to understand that that's a real possibility. You know, Jesus chose these disciples even though they knew he would fail, or they would fail him at times. He chose them anyway. And we have to choose to be willing to invest in people even when and even if they don't always succeed. We have to choose to continue to love them and encourage them and continue to do our best to disciple them and to make them growing followers of Jesus Christ. That's where we go back. You know, Jesus needed to pray for strength, and I'm sure part of the reason that he needed to pray for strength was he knew that these men were going to fail him. And they do it time and time again, whether it's Simon Peter putting his foot in his mouth several times, or James and John being the selfish sons of thunder and asking to sit on his right hand and his left hand. And, you know, they failed him. But Jesus continued to disciple them. Jesus continued to train them and prepare them for the time when he would release them into ministry. And that takes wisdom, that takes patience, that takes strength to do that. And so, you know, a need for prayer for us, certainly as human beings. Well, at the end, when Jesus was preparing to return to the Father, he gave his disciples one command, and that's Matthew chapter 28, 18 through 20, when it says, "Then Jesus came to them and said, 'All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I've commanded you. Surely I am with you always to the very end of the age.'" Then Luke records the very last words that Jesus spoke to his disciples before his departure in Acts chapter 1, when he says, "But you will receive power when the Holy Spirit comes on you, and you will be my witnesses in Jerusalem and in all Judea and Samaria and to the ends of the earth." You see, between these two, we see that the students have become the teachers, in the same way that we are to move from being students to being teachers, and then helping our students become teachers. You see, Jesus, just like my mom, did everything he could to prepare his students for success, for the time that they had together, so that they could be successful in that journey. We, as students of our teachers, are to help our students and do everything that we can to be successful ourselves, and then in turn help them to be successful. Between the two, we see that in the same way, we are to be moving from students to being teachers, and then helping our students become teachers, because only then can we say that we have been successful. Only when we are making disciples, whether it's in Judea or Samaria or even to the ends of the world, you know, we are called to make disciples who make disciples who make disciples. We can only say that we have been successful when those that we have discipled are discipling others, when those who we have taught are teaching others. You know, yes, we've done part of the task when we make a disciple, but it's only when our disciples begin to disciple others that we can look and say that we've been successful. And Jesus has shown us it begins with prayer and great discernment before the teaching really moves into full force. So let's see how we can make disciples now and always.